Oh, hey, what's up? Welcome to the podcast this week. A couple things before we start here at the very tippity top. You saw the thumbnail, so, you know, it's a happy week. It's a happy thing that's happening this week in my life. I'm very excited and thankful for it, but I just want to issue a quick warning here at the top that because of the subject matter of the episode, there's going to be some talking very candidly and specifically about some of the darker elements of alcoholism and of being in active sickness. And I just wanted to mention that up front. Also, my guest this week, who is a very dear to my heart person, has requested to be anonymous. She is currently going through something online where she was sort of engaged in a form of artistic activism, and I'm going to be very vague about it, but it basically exposed her to some unwanted negative attention online that I think she's just trying to keep a low profile because of, and that's all I'll really say about it. Basically just I'm saying specifically kind of or vaguely what it was because I mention it at the end of the episode that, like, I think what she was doing was really cool, and I do think that, but I'm not going to go into specifics on what it was. Just for you, the listener, to know, that's why we are not using her name this week. She was doing something cool, and she's trying to keep a low profile, so that's it, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks for being here with me so far on this journey of doing the podcast. I love doing this show, and I'm so thankful that you guys keep coming back week after week. Cool. Here it is. On June 30th, 2018, I went out drinking with some good friends. I was 4 months into regularly attending meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous at the time. I had a sponsor, I talked to other alcoholics regularly on the phone, and outwardly, I seemed to be working the beginnings of a solid program. Even in my head, I was all good. The fact that I was only drinking on the weekends was a big step forward. I was basically sober. The 30th of June that year fell on a Saturday, and I had jokingly taken to referring to Saturdays as relapse Saturdays with my close friends. Basically, the way it worked was I'd stay dry during the week, go to my meetings, lie to my sponsor on the phone about how many I'd attended and what my current day count was, and then I'd party on the weekend with the boys. And truly, this felt like progress. I used to be getting blackout drunk on a daily basis. Now I was down to only once or twice a week. I figured I could workably manage that pace for the rest of my life and call it good if I was careful. Nobody needed to know. It was simply nobody else's business. That night, I started off at dinner where I ordered 3 High Point beers, 12% double IPAs to be exact, my favorite. And then we went to another bar a few blocks away to keep the vibes rolling. I immediately ordered a beer and a shot, twice, back to back. Now we were cooking. I ordered a Manhattan, another staple of mine, and sipped it down while chatting with the boys. Now things were getting really loose and fun. And this was one of those mixology joints, so I decided to deviate from my normal orders, and I playfully asked the bartender to surprise me with something tropical and boozy for my next drink. He obliged. When I finished that cocktail, I asked for another. Something fun, something different. I know just the thing, he replied, and he hooked me up with a shot that he lit on fire. I can't remember what was in it specifically, but I do remember what it tasted like. Is that Dr. Pepper? I asked. No, but the mixture of such and such liqueur and this or that spirits set on fire tastes just like it. Crazy, right? That's nuts, I exclaimed and promptly ordered another. Now, I'd been drinking long enough to know my hard liquor limit was just about reach for the night. But I'd need something to sip on while I chain-smoked bummed cigarettes on the patio, so I ordered a sensible glass of red wine and headed outside with my crew. I had two glasses of wine before I spotted an intriguing-looking can in the see-through fridge behind the bar. "What's that?" I asked the bartender. Oh, we just got those in. It's rosé in a can. Rosé in a can? I was already pretty solidly drunk, but I had to try rosé in a can. I mean, it's rosé in a can. How often was I going to have the chance to enjoy such a novelty? The canned rosé was predictably horrible. I finished it quickly and ordered my final cool-down beer for the night as we were nearing last call. So for anyone keeping score at home, that's 6 High Point beers, 2 glasses of red wine, a can of rosé, 1 Manhattan, 1 boozy tropical cocktail, 2 novelty shots, and 2 regular shots. All in all, a pretty typical night out. Unfortunately, what happened next was also alarmingly typical. I convinced my friends, as was normal for me to do, that I was totally cool to drive, and then I proceeded to pilot myself along the 25-minute ride home. I don't recall much of that drive, but what I do remember terrifies the hell out of me to this day. I remember coming to on the freeway, going about 110 miles per hour and not knowing where I was. I remember also coming to on the freeway moments later, going about 35 and trying hard to squint over the steering wheel to see the lines in the road because I had triple vision and was having a hard time staying alert. I made it home that night. Somehow. I didn't kill myself or someone else or wind up in jail with my second DUI. I don't know if I deserved that good fortune. I'm almost certain, actually, that I didn't. I wish I hadn't behaved that way. Truly. I wish I could go back and make different decisions. But the fact is that as horrific and ugly as that night was, it helped wake me up to the truth. As I waited deliriously through my shift at work the next day, trying hard not to throw up as I greeted guests and told them the specials, I realized something. If I couldn't commit to getting sober right then and there, my alcoholism was going to kill me. Not in some hyperbolic, metaphorical way, literally. And if it didn't kill me, it was going to wind up with me killing someone else, which was worse. That night was really just the latest in a long line of nights just like it. The tip of a terrifying iceberg. I often have people in my life ask me if it really was that bad. If I really think I did have a dangerous problem with alcohol, or if maybe I was just getting swept up in the hype of the AA cult. I understand why they ask this. They want me to be able to enjoy drinking like they do. They don't want me going too hard on myself or blowing my past mistakes out of proportion. I get it. And honestly, I appreciate it. But the answer is always the same. Yes, I tell them with absolute confidence. It was that bad, and yes, my problem was incredibly dangerous. After June 30th, 2018, it became intensely obvious that no matter how many days I was able to put between me and my last drink, I was never going to be able to change the fact that I am incapable of drinking safely. I knew I had to fully surrender. I went straight to a meeting at the end of my shift and was determined that I'd had my last drink. I was finally done. It's been 730 days and counting since then. I'm thankful for every single one of them. I'm thankful for all the little ways in which I can show up for the people in my life. I'm thankful for every morning without a hangover. Without regret, without fear that I'd done something horrible the night before or that I'd go out and do something horrible that night. And even though it took me about 4 months of going to meetings and listening to other alcoholics tell their war stories to truly get it for myself, my journey didn't really begin on July 1st, 2018. In my mind, my journey began a few months earlier when a sober woman recognized my illness in New York City. She saw that I was desperate for a solution, and she simply and compassionately showed me the path. I think about this person often when I hit big milestones. She means a lot to me, as you can imagine. And today, I've got her on the phone to talk about how we met and to talk about our personal journeys on the path to recovery. From a Blinkevort recording studio in my one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking to the woman who saved my life about the joy of being 2 years clean and sober. How's the quarantine been in the big city?
It's been like, I feel like I'm like really used to spending time by myself now. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember when it all started, like, my friend hit me up and was like, make sure you have food, like, make sure you get cleaning stuff, like, you know, this is really serious. And it was crazy because, like, I had asked a bunch of, like, people what they thought like the weekend before, and they were like, no, this isn't going to be a big deal. And then when she told me that, I was like what, like, is this a big deal? And then I remember like the first month just felt like sleepaway camp. Uh-huh. You know.
Yep.
And then it started getting weird, like, then, like, I feel like I've talked to a lot of other people that it's just affected their brain in like weird ways. And yeah.
Yeah, for sure. My anxiety has been at a 2-year high. Like, it hasn't, I haven't had issues with anxiety really in sobriety until now. And this thing really like brought back a lot of stuff that I hadn't been maybe paying as close of attention to in my recovery, because I just was taking it for granted that it was like better. And then this thing really brought it all back, you know? And so now I'm like daily having to compete with my anxiety, and my meditative morning practice has like never been more important than right now. Are you experiencing some of that, like just like resurgence of old things that you thought maybe you had gotten past?
Oh, absolutely. Like, before all this happened, like, I was like telling everyone that I was like reborn, like, this is the best year of my life. Like, and then all this stuff happened, and I think the isolation really caused my anxiety to surge. And like, the thing is, like, before all this happened, like, I would like have a bad day and then I'd just like go hang out with people and feel better.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm isolated, I don't really have that like output. Like, I'm so alone with my thoughts and they can be really not gentle, you know?
Yep.
So it's kind of like a bad cycle. And then I wasn't super into meditating until all this happened. And now I make sure that I meditate every day.
Yeah, it's been huge for me. And it is something that I think, yeah, I wasn't sure that I needed to do it on a daily basis either. And this thing really like brought it into focus that like the days where I do it and the days where I don't are very clearly different. And I'm really seeing that difference. I had people telling me that early on in the program. They'd be like, I straight up need to meditate. Otherwise, I'm in danger. And I'd be like, take it easy. Like, you're fine.
Yeah.
And then with this, I'm like, actually, like, I just do so much better when I can get myself to just take 10 minutes in the morning before getting online and before reading the shitstorm of news and, you know, watching videos about racism and watching idiots who refuse to wear masks. And, you know, I really have to get my mind straight first, and get myself into a space of like love and gratitude and acceptance and like appreciation for what I have. Otherwise, man, this thing really hit hard. And I remember that, just like you were saying, those first few days, I remember like being out with a friend on the day that it seemed like everything was like really coming down. It was like that week where like Tom Hanks and his wife were both diagnosed and like basketball players started getting diagnosed and the NBA said they were going to shut down. And it was like that day that the NBA announced that they were going to shut down. And I was out with a friend in Santa Monica, and I looked at him and I said, I was like, we were both looking at our phones, and I looked at him and I was like, should we be outside right now? And he was like, I don't know, man. And it was just kind of like the realization that like, oh, this is happening. And God, that was 4 months ago, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we're still in the early stages. It feels like, yeah.
Yeah. I remember that week.
Yeah. You can really feel that people, especially in America, are like ready to be done with it, but it's like, that's the problem is it doesn't really care whether or not we're ready to be done with it.
Yeah, it's so tragic.
Yeah. So, yeah, I want to go back a little bit. Okay, we're talking about quarantine and stuff, but I want to talk I'm recording now, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I want to just talk – thanks for doing this, by the way. Thanks for being willing to talk to me. It's always nice to talk to you and hear where you're at. And I'm always glad to hear that you're like still sober and still sticking with it. But
likewise.
Yeah. I don't know if I know you. I think you might have told me this early on when we like would like go to a meeting together. Like if we went to Northside together, you might have told me a little bit about your story. But like, give me a little breakdown on how you found yourself in the rooms and how you initially got sober.
Let's see. The thing is, like, once I got sober, like, looking back, things looked a lot worse than they were before I got sober. Mm-hmm. Like, because I couldn't see what the problem was like before that, and I think I just got exhausted. Like I reached a point where it was like I would try everything to quit. I tried like only drinking at certain times of day, like only drinking certain kinds, like only using certain drugs, not using drugs at all. And like, it was really unmanageable. And then it was confusing because sometimes I would be able to go, like, it was like, I was trying so hard to quit that I would be able to put all these control mechanisms in place where I wouldn't drink for a few weeks. But I'd always end up doing it again. I'd always like feel like, oh, well, I got this, like someone who has a problem wouldn't have this the way that I have it. And then that would always follow with like giving myself permission to like go out. And it was scary. It was scary like waking up and realizing that I was still stuck in a cycle and having a lot of fear about that. And I got really exhausted and I felt like I didn't really have any other options. And that was kind of when, like, I was like willing to seek help. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, there's so many things. I like never know how much I should say about AA, like, right, publicly,
mm-hmm,
you know, like, I think there's like speaker tapes really helped me, mm-hmm, when I was new. I used to listen to them like on the train, on the way to work. And I also, like, the craziest thing happened to me when I got sober. It was like, I had this moment, like, okay, so I started going to meetings in New York. I had like 35 days. And then this friend of mine, who's like a pretty famous rapper, was like in town, and they were like, do you want to get dinner? And I always felt like I couldn't like turn down hanging out with people, especially if I hadn't seen them in a long time. And I had like 35 days, and I like hadn't really been reaching out to people or like really connecting with anyone in recovery. I just thought that like maybe I would get some information and like get things under control and like feel better.
Right.
And like I really needed friends too, because I had like burned almost every bridge, you know, or like I was just prone to not getting close to people. But I remember walking to go get dinner with my friend, and I hadn't met up with them yet. And I just had this feeling like I'm going to drink tonight. Like, there's no way that I can get through this hangout without drinking. And that was like when I knew, like, I was like, oh, maybe like this is when I should like call someone. And like, that's what they talk about. Like, you got to like pick up the phone and call someone.
Yep.
But I was like, I haven't been doing this, so like, I'm not going to do it. Like, it felt so uncomfortable. Like, I couldn't remember the last time that I even like talked to one of my friends on the phone, you know? And like, I went out with him and I drank, and then I went out the next night and I told my friend I wasn't going to drink, and I went out with like all these doctors. And like, I used to, when I would drink, I think it was my liver. Now that I'm sober, like, I like looking back, but I thought I had an allergy to alcohol, because when I would drink, I would get like rashes and hives like all over my skin.
Yeah.
And I remember like I was hanging out with these friends of mine who were doctors, and I was like showing them my skin. And I was like, see, I can't drink because like my skin does this thing. Like, I didn't really care about that. Deep down, I knew I couldn't drink because I was an alcoholic. But like, yeah, like my skin would break out, and it was a good excuse to try and protect myself from drinking.
Yeah.
So I was like showing them my skin, and they were like, oh, well, like if you have that problem, you should try drinking vodka. They were like, if just vodka doesn't make your skin break out, then you probably aren't allergic to alcohol. And I was like, oh, perfect. Well, then do you have any vodka? And then I ended up like drinking and going to China Chalet all night. But like the next day, my friend, who's just like this kid that I met on Instagram, like hit me up, and he was like, you should like really go to a meeting. And so I just took his advice and I went, and it was Northside. Yeah, like after that, I felt like, okay, like if I don't do like all the things that are going to help me here, or that people say are going to help me, like it's probably not going to work out for me.
Yeah.
You know, especially because I had that moment where like I thought I was going to make a phone call and I didn't. So, like, I started, like, doing all the stuff. I started going to, like, meetings. And then, like, I still wasn't, like, super deep in sobriety or in the program. And I think I had, like, 2 weeks sober or something. And I got a job. And I just got it, like, online on Indeed. And then when I got there, there was, like, this guy that was my boss. He was, like, in his 40s. And we like went out to lunch. They had like a new team meeting at lunch, and he was just like the nicest person. And then we got back to like the office, and he was like standing behind me showing something on my computer. And he saw like I was on like an email gratitude list, mm-hmm, and it like popped up. Like I got a gratitude email and it popped up in the corner of my computer. And then he like looked at me and he was like, what's your Instagram? And he followed me on Instagram. And we had all these friends in common that were all in AA. And then he messaged me from his computer, and he was like, are you sober? And I was like, yeah. And he asked me like how I knew these people, and I was like, oh, this person's my sponsor. And he was like, oh, like that person's my grand sponsee.
Wow.
So he was actually my great grand sponsor.
Wow.
And then like, yeah, it was such a moment for me. Like, you know, it was like a shitty job. Like, a lot of things weren't ideal, but it was like in that moment, I felt like maybe I'm in the right place, and, maybe just choosing to believe that will make things better, you know? And he ended up like, he would let me leave early every day to make a meeting, and he would like talk to me about program stuff all the time. And it was just like I don't know, like if that hadn't have happened, I don't know if I would have stayed sober, because that was when I started going to meetings every day and it became like a thing for me.
Right. Yeah, it almost sounds like you were kind of, you know, really being taken care of there mm-hmm. early on. Like, you made that decision to, like, you go to Northside and you go, I think I need to take this more seriously and do what these people are recommending I do if I want this to work. And then 2 weeks into that, you get this job and you meet this guy who's letting you leave work early so you can make meetings. And it's kind of like you have no excuse but to be fully invested. But I think that's mm-hmm. sort of what happens when you finally make that choice. I spent the first like 4 months in the program kind of trying to do it on my own terms, like thinking like, if I can stay sober like 5 days out of the week and drink on the weekends and use this program to be sober most of the time, that'll be a big improvement from how my life was, you know, because mm-hmm. I was drinking every single day and drinking heavily, and I had all kinds of health problems as a result of that. And I thought, if I can just decrease my intake and sort of use the program for that, and nobody really needs to know that I'm drinking on the weekends, it's none of their business, then that'll be a big improvement. But yeah, I sort of, like you, had one of those experiences where I was out on a weekend and it became very clear to me that it didn't matter how much time I was able to put between me and my last drink. I wasn't capable of drinking safely, you know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't capable of making safe decisions and taking good care of myself when I was drunk. So,
mm-hmm.
and I realized, kind of like you realized, like, okay, if this is gonna work, I have to fully let go of my old way of doing things, and I have to fully surrender. And it's like I'd been going to meetings consistently for like 4 months at that point, but I just was sort of using it in this sort of like pick and choose way, where I was like, well, I'll do this, but not this, or I'll, you know, I'll listen to this, but not this. And how I want to use it is sort of my business and no one else's business. And while that's true, there's no one in this organization who's going to force you to do anything, or who's going mm-hmm. to, it's also true that they say from the very beginning, you know, like, your best bet is to just take the suggestions, you know, your best bet is just to trust that we've been through this before, and what we're telling you is most likely the thing that you need to hear. But God, mm-hmm. it's hard to get to that point. That's really cool to hear. I don't know if I had heard that story, that your boss wound up being your grand sponsor.
Yeah, my great-grandsponsor.
Great-grandsponsor. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you still work for that person?
No. He moved, and I took his job, actually.
Oh,
and
my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and then I quit that job. But, yeah, he was amazing. I still stay in touch with him.
How long have you got now? What is it, 2.5 years? Or
yeah, like a little over 2.5.
Yeah, I remember when I met you, you had 5 months, and I thought that was the craziest thing I'd ever heard. I thought, like, I couldn't conceive of it, you know? And I remember just thinking, like, what, dude? Like, she hasn't had a drink in 5 months? And it's funny now, like, you're laughing in the same way that I am, because I'm like, I feel like a newcomer at 2 years, you know? Like, I still feel like a new person who's learning new things all the time and who's, like, very early on in my process of, like, recovery. But at the time, meeting you and you having 5 months, I was like, you must know so much. And and the truth is, like, you knew a whole shitload more than I did at that point. And you knew and you had accomplished enough for me to be very impressed. But yeah, I was like, I don't know. At that time, it's like anyone who has a month is anyone who has more than 30 days is just like so impressive, you know?
Yeah. I feel like, I actually feel like you don't have to have much time in the program to really understand all the principles and suggestions, you know? Like, I think it took around 90 days for me, like going to a meeting every day. But like, and then it's like, and then I have those tools to work with in my life, and like, right. I can find more serenity as I go. But like, you know, I think you get all the information you need really early on, you know, and that like makes sense.
Yeah.
For people to stay sober. But it was like funny, like, are you going to talk about how we met?
Well, I'm wondering, yeah, I kind of want to. Like, I kind of want to know from your end, like, what you remember, if you remember anything. Because I think about it all the time, obviously, because it's the thing that saved my life. And so anytime I get to talk to you, it's very special for me. Because I think that you were just doing what was natural for a person at where you were at. Like, I think you recognized in me a lot of things that you knew about yourself. And you just saw, and also I was like, I was looking for help, and anytime someone would mention to me that they were sober, I was like, how'd you do that? You know, and I asked lots of questions, and but yeah, it's something that I think about all the time. But like, from your perspective, was it just kind of like, get this guy away from me type of thing, or?
No, not at all. Like, I feel like on Tinder, like, I feel like there's so many alcoholics on Tinder, and like,
we met on Tinder.
Yeah. Like, okay. So, but, there's so many alcoholics on Tinder. And when I was new in recovery, and I feel like I've heard a lot of other people have this experience, like, it's like, I started to see all alcoholics around me.
Yeah.
Like, it was like unavoidable. And like, I was so hyper-focused on alcoholism that it was like, just, you know, I can't say whether someone's an alcoholic, right. But like, I knew the symptoms in myself and I would see it in other people. And it was just like so present in the front of my mind. And then to like go on Tinder and just like, I don't know, like, we started talking a little bit, and then you, like, I think you were like, you want to get drinks sometime or something like that. And, like, I would always say, I always tell people that I don't drink. Like, it's like, obviously, I can go get, like, a drink with someone. I can go get, like, a seltzer. But I always say I don't drink just because that's just what I do.
Like, yeah.
But
Your name in my phone to this day is, well, I won't say your name, but it's Sober Than Your Name. Because at that time, now when I meet people in the program, I'll usually put their name in like AA afterward, or like afterward, like the meeting that I met them at. But at this time, I didn't know anyone in the program. So I just called you Sober Blank, Sober Your Name. And it's still that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. Yeah. Like, but yeah, like, I think you just said literally everything. Like, you hit, like, every mark. It was like, I said I didn't drink, and then you're, like, asking me all these questions about it. Like, you were really curious. And then you told me, like, that you spent all your money and that, like, you couldn't stop and that it was, like, a problem. And I was like, oh, like, well, have you tried going to a meeting before? Or just something like that, you know? And it's like, usually like I wouldn't do that, especially like on Tinder. Like, it's like, I wasn't looking to like recruit anyone,
totally,
you know? But it was just like, I could read it in your voice.
Yeah.
And I think you thought we were going to go to a meeting together, and I was like, no, like, I can't go to a meeting tonight, but you should go to this meeting. And I don't think I even told you it was a men's meeting.
You didn't tell me it was a men's meeting, and you didn't tell me that it was AA. And I was looking so hard for something that was not AA, because I was just a staunch atheist, and I didn't want anyone telling me that I had to believe in God in order to get sober. So luckily you just said, yeah, I go to meetings, and I didn't really know what that meant. And you said, you should go to this meeting. It's called PAX, and you sent me the address for it, and I assumed you'd be there. And I show up, and I text you. I go, hey, I'm at the meeting. And you went, well, enjoy it. I hope you have fun. And I was like, oh, I guess she's not coming. And I did not know
that I like didn't tell you it was AA or that you thought I was going to be there, but it's so funny.
And so I go in, and but as soon as I walked in, I saw all those signs on the wall, like all the like sayings and everything. And I was just like, oh no, it's AA. And like, and it's PAX, and at PAX, you have to sit at a newcomer table. And you have to like speak if you're a newcomer, you have to share. Well, you can pass, but like, it's going to come to you. Like they're going to ask you to share and give your day count. I was a sobbing mess by 10 minutes into the meeting. I knew very early on that I was where I was supposed to be, and I didn't like that. It also just terrified the hell out of me. The big thing that I kept thinking was, I know this is what I'm supposed to do, but I can't conceive of how I can do something like this. It's too hard. So when it got to me, I just said, I said, this is my first day. And, you know, I have less than 24 hours sober, and I'm really, really terrified that I'm not going to be able to do this. And I could barely speak. I was like crying so hard. And all these dudes are reaching out and putting their hands on my shoulder and passing me phone numbers and just saying, call me, you know, give me a call tonight, you know. And then afterward, people invited me to fellowship, and I went to a diner across the street and talked with all these dudes that I still talk to this day. And the speaker at that meeting was Michael, who is my sponsor to this day. And he told a story that was almost exactly like mine, where he was like single and he was like out dating in New York and kind of just like doing this revolving door of like one night stands. And he met a person online who 12-stepped him. And I'm sitting there in the room as he's telling this story, and I'm like, no way, dude. This guy's, and I started thinking like, is this like a conspiracy? Like, did I get like, I don't know. Like, did this girl look me up on purpose? And then, like, I don't know. Were people looking at my social media and then trying to lure me into an AA meeting? But it's just like you said. It's like the reason it happened is because I was showing such curiosity, not the other way around. You know, it wasn't it wasn't proselytized to me or like sold to me. It was I was so goddamn desperate for a solution, and. And anytime someone seemed to have a grip on it, I wanted to know everything about how they got there. So yeah, it didn't take me long to get over the fact that we weren't going on a date, and that because right when I got there, I was like, okay, well, this is more important anyway, and this is where I'm supposed to be. And
yeah.
Of course, now I just I think I'll think of you for the rest of my life as the person who saved my life. However innocent it was on your end that you just were like, sure, this guy's asking a lot of questions. I'll see if, you know, because I think at that point it's like, you don't even know if I'm gonna go, you know?
Yeah.
And if I'm actually serious or if I'm just drunk. Because, you know, I bet you've had those experiences too, because I sure have, where like a drunk person is talking to you at like a party and they're like, I got to get sober, man. Like, I got to do what you did. And you're like, okay. And in your head, you're just kind of like, sure, well, I can point you in the direction of something you can go to, but I don't know if you're going to remember this tomorrow or
No, I would just tell them to call me when, like, tomorrow when they aren't drunk.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Just like, cool. Well, like, here's my number and you can give me a call.
Yeah. Yeah. And now, like, now I look back on how many people, like, reached their hand out to me and I didn't even notice it for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't want certain solutions. I didn't want AA because I think I was a little bit afraid that it would work and I wasn't really ready for something that would work. I remember when I got my DUI, AA was one of the options for my, like, a class that I had to take. I could take AA or do community service, and I chose community service and these Prime for Life courses instead of AA. And I think I was just a little bit afraid of the God stuff and afraid of, like, a permanent solution, you know? Like, obviously it's not a permanent solution. It's something you have to kind of recommit to on a daily basis. And you said it so elegantly that it's like, you really do kind of get everything you need to know in those first 90 days. And then it's just a matter of figuring out how to apply those tools on a daily basis for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah. It's just, you know, like, I just keep growing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like still the same principles, and like, I don't know, having people to talk to that support me is just the most important thing, I feel.
Yep. Getting on the phone, meditating. Yeah, that same thing of like in those early days of like, hey, if you think you're going to drink, pick up the phone. It's like, it's that same thing today where if I'm feeling anxious, and it really works like magic. It's like if I'm feeling really anxious on a day, I call my sponsor, tell him I'm feeling anxious, and then he usually says, call someone else and ask them how they're doing, you know? Get on the phone, call another alcoholic, ask them how they're doing. And it's like magic. I call someone and I say, hey, how are you doing? And they go, oh, not too great. This, this, or this happened. And instantly I'm in the work of talking to someone else and helping them, and I'm not focused on my panic attack. And it's just that same, it's the same stuff. You know, you go to anniversary meetings and there's people with 20, 30 years and they always just go, the program's the same today as it was my first month, you know? It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Moving forward out of that, we did wind up going to some meetings together, to some Northside meetings in Brooklyn. And I think I still thought at that point, like, well, we can still, like, go to coffee together, like go like we could go on a date. And you were like really quick to be like, no, listen, bro, like I think you should focus on this and and like do this. And I was like kind of bummed out. I was like, oh man, I kind of thought I was, you know. And but again, really quickly I was like, I got over it because I realized why what you were doing was actually the right move and like really compassionate. And it felt like somehow like you were like ducking me, but really you were like, no, if you're going to be serious about this, if you're going to do this, like you should focus on this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was the right move. And, I don't know. Do you remember when I came back to New York like a year after that? And I got to see you at a meeting, and I got to come up and thank you. And I don't know if you remember that, but
I do.
Yeah,
that was nice.
It's just always nice to get to catch up with you and to see you. I have people now in my life who I've brought in, who have a similar regard, it seems, toward me, and I don't necessarily like feel like I did anything like special, you know. It was a very similar circumstance where they were asking me all the right questions and I just said, here's my number, give me a call. And, you know, and now like I have people in like my home group out here in LA who every time they share, they're like, Austin's the dude that brought me in here. Like Austin's the one that like was answering my phone calls that first week. And I'm like, yeah, but I did that. And I told them this in the first week, like, call me because it's also helping me. Like, you're doing me a favor by calling me. It's part of my program to answer that phone call. And also, I do it because of people like you. Because the only reason that I am about to celebrate 2 years of sobriety is because you were willing to field my questions and to point me in the right direction, you know?
Yeah, It's a simple program.
Mm-hmm. It's a simple program for people who think that they're very complicated. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Things get real complicated real fast. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I just, you know, I care about you and I just want the best for you and I want the best for everyone, you know? And I don't know. I just try to live by the principles, but, like, no one's perfect and... it's just nice to have people there for me.
Are you sponsoring people at this point in your sobriety or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, I do sponsor. I don't have any sponsees right now. I have a sponsee that comes and goes, you know.
Mm. I just got the go ahead from my sponsor to start getting my hand up in meetings about sponsoring. And I'm a little bit nervous. But also I'm just kind of like, just like everything in this program, I'm just like, it's fine. I'll just do it one day at a time. And if someone wants to talk to me about being sponsored, it's just a one day at a time thing of like, sure, let's get together and we'll go over your story and then we'll see if this is a good fit and we'll, you know, and
yeah.
I don't need to future trip about it.
Not at all. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I don't feel like I'm here to like convince anyone of anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if they want to talk, I'm here. Or like, if they want to go over the big book, I'm here, you know, but I'm not really coming up with anything.
Yeah. Did you have early on in my sobriety when I had people who would approach me, who would have questions or who would like want to talk about like how I got sober? I felt I would get really nervous and I felt like really strongly that like if I didn't say the right things, I could potentially be the thing that makes or breaks this person's opportunity. Did you ever have any of that?
I don't remember. I think, like, when I was newer, I was definitely so much more excited about helping newcomers, mm-hmm. you know? Like, people will just get flooded, like, at the end of the meeting with, like, phone numbers.
Yeah.
And I definitely, like, wanted to be at the front of the line. Like, mm-hmm. But now, like, I think I'm a little bit more relaxed. But, yeah, I definitely, I mean, I want to say everything right, or I think I had a lot more pressure to do that back then.
Mm-hmm.
But I like hearing, like, wear it like a loose garment. Like, really nothing's that serious. Like, I feel like I'm prone to take things really seriously.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's such a New York thing too. There's really interesting differences. I've now been in the program in New York, Salt Lake City, and Los Angeles, and I'm not shitting on LA meetings or Salt Lake meetings or anything, but like that tendency to flood the newcomer to like come around the newcomer and just like give them so many numbers at the end of the meeting. That always happened in New York meetings, and I don't see that as often at LA meetings or Salt Lake meetings. I think a few people will go up, but I'm always the person doing that. I feel like when I'm in a meeting and a person says they're new, I go up and I talk to them afterward because that's how it was for me when I first came in. But I'm always surprised that there's not more people like lining up to get this person's info. And and I don't know. There was a thing in New York that felt – and it still feels like this. I've been able to go back to New York meetings since we've gone on to Zoom, but it just felt like more of a team environment, like we're all in this together kind of thing. And maybe that's because of – part of me thinks like being in a city where you walk to meetings and you walk home and like the diner's right around the corner where fellowship is happening is like people are more likely to fellowship and people are more likely to – be more up close and personal with it. Whereas when everyone's driving to the meeting in their separate cars and just getting in their cars and going home afterward, and someone's like, hey, fellowship's at this diner that's like one neighborhood over. If anyone wants to go, it's like, it's less likely that people are going to go. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's definitely this communal vibe in New York meetings that I miss and that was very nice coming in as a newcomer.
I love the energy of like diner fellowships, mm-hmm. and like everyone walking down the street together to get there, and then just being the weirdest group at a diner, like taking up so many tables, and like all of us are like different ages, like drastically.
Yep.
I always try and figure out like what people think we're doing there.
Exactly. It's like, we do not look like a crew that we do not look like a normal crew. We've literally got people in their 70s and people in their 20s and people in their 50s and all different manner of styles. And, you know, yeah. And you wonder, you're like, they must think we're like a church group or something, like some kind of
like, yeah, I don't know, like a production team or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nobody's ordering cocktails, obviously, and nobody, yeah, or, and we're all getting like milkshakes and stuff and coffee. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I miss that. It's been nice to pop in to New York Zoom meetings and to hear there's all these guys popping into the PAX meeting from all over the country who used to go to PAX, and they're just talking about how they got sober at PAX and how they, to this day, PAX is one of their favorite places. And I'm like, yeah, man, me too. Like I've been to meetings in lots of different places and it's always good and I always appreciate it. And I like small meetings and I like the different ways that people in different parts of the country have found to like make it work. But there's something about that New York energy that I miss.
I love that.
The camaraderie and the team aspect.
Yeah,
it's amazing though, how in these 2 years I've really found that what we're doing and what we're undertaking is just literally like no different than any person using any method to try and better their spiritual health and their emotional health. It doesn't just apply to sobriety, and that's why groups like Al-Anon are so great and stuff. You know, it's just like whatever you do, whatever you're confronting, whether it's depression or anxiety or just whatever it is that you're confronting in your life, it's like you sort of have to throw yourself into it with reckless abandon, and you also have to be willing to just take it at a day-to-day pace, you know, and not expect immediate magical results.
I always want the quickest results, but I've developed such a appreciation for things just kind of happening over time. And then like a lot of really amazing things happen that I never could have seen coming to, you know, and I try to remember that.
What are some of those? What are those things that when you sit and you think like about the significant ways that your life has improved or changed in like surprising and exciting ways, what are some of those things?
I mean, I really feel like I just feel better. You know, like, and I used to hear people say that and I'd like roll my eyes and be like, I am not ready to be in this program. But I do feel better. And I don't know. Sometimes I wish I could think of something off the top of my head, but sometimes like just something really cute will happen. And then like I just am more present to appreciate it.
Yeah. I know what you mean, though. It's for me, it's like that. It's not these overwhelming white light moments of like. It's sometimes it is. Sometimes I'll be in a really deep meditation and it'll all hit me all at once, like the incredible ways in which my life has been so drastically improved and changed. But generally, it's just kind of like little moments, little things that I take notice of that I go, I wouldn't have been able to do that 2 years ago, or I wouldn't have had that response 2 years ago. You know,
yeah.
I wouldn't have known how to approach that problem 2 years ago, you know?
Yeah. I think like knowing that I'm capable is like a new thing for me.
Yeah.
Like in recovery, and that confidence and self-esteem has been really life-changing for me. Just in the way that I approach things every day.
Yeah, I've even been thinking this lately, that it's like exactly that self-regard and that self-esteem of like, I'm capable. I've even been thinking lately, like, God, I managed to survive somehow out there on my own for, you know, 11 years of my adulthood as an active alcoholic. And I managed to like somehow like keep my shit like relatively together. And now it's like, God, if I can do that, you know, and then if I can figure out how to like get through that, the process of getting sober and working through recovery, like, geez, like previously baffling issues really start becoming a lot more manageable. And it's all on just a step-by-step day-to-day process. Because anytime I approach a new thing now that really scares me or that baffles me, I just know I have a system in place, a system of tools of how to approach it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it, I don't know. It's just, there's the major things. Like I used to have daily panic attacks, and I was like consistently suicidal for a long time in my 20s. And so there's those major things that are gone from my life. Like I don't want to kill myself anymore, and I don't have panic attacks, and those are like the big ones, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's just all the little things, you know. There's little things that I like. I'm in a really great relationship, and like I'm able to like approach issues with my partner that like I didn't know how to do before, you know. And mm-hmm. I can see those differences, and I don't know. There's just lots of little blessings of sobriety. And like you said, little cute things that happen that you notice and go, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
You know, there's less sometimes, there's less of like the fun and excitement of the recklessness of being actively out there, you know? When you just kind of go out for the night and go like, I don't even know what's going to happen tonight. Like, I don't know where I'm going to wind up, and I don't know how much money I'm going to spend, and I don't know who I'm going to wind up with, or like, and like that kind of reckless fun that comes with being just a dumb 20-something. There's less of that, but also like, I'm good.
you know?
Like, I did it, and...
You made it.
Yeah. I did all the drugs I wanted to do. And, you know, I had fun.
Yeah.
And now it's just nice to feel like I'm continuing to grow and continuing to get healthier. I still am just going through it. Like you said, with this quarantine happening, it's like bringing up all kinds of issues. And I still need to be engaged in a daily program, but
you know, it's amazing how adaptable people are, you know.
Mm-hmm. Things that just seem impossible, things that you never think that you can adjust to, you absolutely can on a day-to-day basis, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've been talking with friends lately who are like feeling really baffled by depression and anxiety, and talking to them on the phone, and I hear the phrase a lot, like, I think this is just how I am, though. Like, I think, like, I just am a person who's just chronically depressed and anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that feeling. I remember feeling like, yeah, but, like, this is just part of my identity. Like, I can't, like, not be this way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is who I am. And that's that insidious lie of diseases like alcoholism and depression and anxiety and that want to convince you that there's nothing you can do, you know. But we are remarkably adaptable on when we just – when we decide to take consistent daily steps.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of work to be done, you know, always.
Always. Always. Sometimes that baffles me. Sometimes it feels like, God, am I ever going to be done? like, am I ever going to, like, get it? Am I ever just going to, like, reach enlightenment? You know? And
maybe. Maybe not.
Yeah. I'm not counting on it, you know? I think what I want to expect for my life is that I'm just going to continue to apply these tools as necessary, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm going to continue to run into new issues, and I'm going to continue to just apply these simple tools. Get on the phone, go to a meeting, meditate, you know, try to get outside yourself, do some service, keep it simple.
Yeah. Love yourself.
Love yourself. Absolutely. That's a big one for me is that's a big part of my meditation is cultivating a good sense of self-love before I try to transmit love to other people. You know?
Yeah.
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 It's good though. So outside of this little debacle that I won't go into, are you doing okay? Are you managing to, and outside of obviously the craziness of COVID-19 and quarantine in New York City, are you doing all right?
Yeah, I'm doing really good.
Good.
I'm just doing arts and crafts in my apartment.
Hasn't it been fun to be a creative person and just get so much free time to do projects?
Yeah, it's been nice. I don't know if I would opt for this situation, but it's been really nice to just like do crafts and not take myself seriously, you know?
Yeah. I've been trying to, yeah, like you said, I wish that the circumstances were different. I wish that it wasn't that hundreds of thousands of people are dying across the world so that I can have a little break from work. I wish the circumstances were different, but I've been trying to make the most and enjoy the time to invest in my creativity and nurture that, you know?
Yeah.
So... And then also cutting myself some slack if I spend a couple days just watching TV.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
What TV shows are you watching?
All of them. Every single one.
I need recommendations.
No, we've been watching a lot. Like we go back and forth between like lighter fare, like trash TV things, like reality TV, and then like wholesome reality TV. Like I think that things like Queer Eye and RuPaul's Drag Race fall under the umbrella of like wholesome, fun reality TV. And so we watch a lot of that, and then we watch like, you know, like thoughtful documentaries to educate ourselves, and then we watch, you know, hard-hitting dramas. Like we just finished watching rewatching for me the series Watchmen on HBO, which is great.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's great. It's a fictionalized version of America where they talk about sort of just the history of white supremacy in America and the infiltration of white supremacy into all aspects of our society, but it's done through the lens of the Watchmen universe, which is a famous comic book series from the 80s. And it's great. It's really wonderful, and it's very timely and very relevant. We just finished watching that last night. It's awesome. We're watching The Great on Hulu. That's really fun. We watched Mrs. America on Hulu, and that was awesome. It's about the feminist movement trying to get the ERA ratified in the 70s. Really solid. And my favorite one that I watched recently was Devs, which is all about determinism and free will. And it was really trippy and crazy and all the right ways that I like.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Are you watching anything good?
No.
Well, there you go. There's some recommendations for you and for the listeners at home. I think we about covered it, covered our weird story of how we met and how you helped me out. And I don't know, it's just nice to check in with you every once in a while. And I think about you at this time, especially when I'm coming up on anniversaries, because it wouldn't have happened without you. And I mean, maybe I would have met someone else, but it's good to check in and just hear that you're still doing all right and still plugging along.
Yeah, you too. I was so happy to get your text.
Good, good.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, when we met, I had more time than you, and now I feel like we kind of have the same amount of time. So yeah. It's like, it's nice to have buddies.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's weird. I feel like it's people like you and people like my sponsor and people who are there early on that can see the progress more too. Like my sponsor will always just be like, dude, you were like not doing okay. I'm like, I know, man. He's like, you were like really not doing okay. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, and now you're like handling things just a lot better, you know?
Yeah. People have said stuff like that to me too. And I'm like, what? Like, I didn't see it that way back then.
It's like, yeah. I did see it that way, but also like in my frame of reference, I'm more or less the same guy. I'm just sober. But to someone who was there, like in the crisis moments, it's like, well, no, you were like in crisis, you know, you were freaking out. Like I was like calling him at bodegas and being like, dude, I've got a six pack in my hands and like, I'm gonna buy it. And he'd be like, okay, well, can we just talk on the phone? And he'd be like, you called me, right? And I'd be like, I know, but like, I'm gonna buy this six pack, okay? And he would be like, all right, like you can, that's fine. He's like, and you can just call me tomorrow. And like, you know, and I'd be like, oh, geez, like, but I don't want to buy it. And he'd be like, okay, well, so don't, you know, like just freaking out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. But cool. It's good to talk with you.
Yeah. It's so good to hear from you. I hope I hear from you again next year.
You probably will. just checking in going, hey, don't worry, it's still working. You still did a good thing. So be proud of that. And yeah, thanks for talking with me on here. And I hope that the recovery process from that thing also continues to go well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And yeah, being vague about it, but like I said last night, I think what you did was really cool. So,
oh, thanks. Yep.
Cool. I looked it up, and it's pretty cool.
Oh, cool! So, thank you.
Yeah, nice to hear from you. Thanks for talking with me. I think that's it. So,
okay, bye.
Bye bye. So there's that. Yeah, always good to catch up with her. A few things we talked about in there. We talked about Al-Anon. I think there's a lot of people who aren't associated with any 12-step programs or any kind of recovery themselves that when they hear Al-Anon, they assume that's Alcoholics Anonymous. And I get why they assume that. But Al-Anon's actually a 12-step group and a support group for people who are family members of addicts or partners of addicts or just friends with addicts. It's kind of just like Alcoholics Anonymous for normies, for people who just want to utilize the tools to just help themselves with other issues. There's all kinds of programs like that that I think are so amazing because they're just free and available to us that you can just find an Al-Anon meeting and just show up and just start going. Like, it's really kind of amazing. And it won't cost you, you know, hundreds of dollars a month. Not to say that you shouldn't pursue some kind of, you know, treatment from a therapist or licensed professional, perhaps medication's the route to go. I just think the bottom line is whatever it is you're struggling with out there, whether it's alcoholism or drug addiction or just, you know, garden variety mental illness, you know, depression or anxiety, don't wait to get started working on it, you know? And don't be discouraged when whatever it is that you decide is going to be your thing, whatever your medicine is that you're going to decide to take, don't be discouraged when it doesn't work like a magic bullet and it doesn't instantly take away all the pain and take away all the problems. You know, my life hasn't been completely freed from pain and disappointment and fear and anger and, you know, all the normal human emotions. But like any good solution out there, it's not this magic cure-all thing that I do and it just takes care of all my problems. It's little, simple, practical things done on a daily basis to gradually, over time, improve manageability in your life, improve serenity, improve peace, improve awareness and thoughtfulness, and just kind of self-esteem and confidence so that you can just handle things easier. And it's just little incremental improvements that you continue to make. And of course, there's backslides and there's moments where it feels like, I slipped up, or I'm not working my program as hard as I used to, or I'm not, you know, and that's just human. But basically, I would just encourage you to get started, you know? Everyone needs their moment that brings them to their knees, like I had. But if you've already had plenty of those moments and you just keep thinking like, I just don't know if anything's ever gonna fix me, I really, you know, give me a call, reach out. I always say at the end of the show that I wanna hear from you, but especially on this episode, I really wanna hear from you. You know, if I can do it, you can do it. That's just the truth. Because if you're out there right now thinking there's no way I can do this, that's exactly what I was thinking. It really felt impossible. And I don't know. It still seems impossible. It seems like going the rest of my life is an impossible task. But going the rest of today seems very doable, you know? Early on, when I first met the person that I was just talking to, going a day was a big question mark. It was like, I don't know if I can go a day. Going 2-3 days, yeah, it was almost unthinkable. But now in my life, getting to the end of the day without a drink seems not only possible, but just seems like, yeah, of course I'm going to do that. It's very easy. Going the rest of my life without a drink still seems crazy. But I can do today. Pretty sure I can do tomorrow. Pretty sure I can do the rest of the week. I didn't have that 2 years ago. Reach out. If not to me, to someone else, you know? I want you to. It helps me. So, yeah, that's it. Thanks for listening this week. I'm happy. Feels good. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. The show is mixed and mastered by Chrissy Bear, Chris Bjorn, over at Marmalade Music. Marmalade Music is an audio engineering company that's ready to take your audio project, whether it's your podcast or your single or your EP or your album. Marmalade's ready to take it to the next level. They do all of my stuff. They did my album that's coming out here in a couple months. They've done all my singles that have been released this year. I trust Marmalade with everything. Go to marmalademusicslc.com. Tell them that you listen to People Pleaser and take 20% off your first project. Again, that's marmalademusicslc.com. Tell them that you listen to People Pleaser. Take 20% off your project. If you want to hear more of my stuff, you can go to austin-archer.com. That's a dash, not a slash. It's not like spelled out dash. It's just austin-archer.com for all my stuff, or just look up Austin Archer on Apple Music or Spotify. Yeah. Okay. Breathe it out. Meditate, you know. Give someone a call. Ask them how they're doing. Check in with yourself. Tell yourself you're doing a good job, because you are. Okay. All right. Love you. Bye-bye.